This is the Toronto Raptors In-Depth Podcast, a show produced by Raptors fans for Raptors fans. Today, we're going to be looking at roster strengths and weaknesses, trade reviews, spending power, playoff analysis, and much more, all coming up next. I'm your host, Lucas Burns. I'm now joined here by Krina Mustafa of Locked On Women's Basketball, The Parlay, Venus Sports, Unbenched, and a whole bunch of other wonderful projects I'm sure I'm missing out on. Krina, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you very much for having me. It's always interesting when people do intros for me on their podcast.
Oh, yeah. And I'm sure, as I said, I'm sure there's a million other things that I missed, too. So you can always...
You're good.
Cover the bases. So the plan right now is to go through a bit of the mock trade deadline stuff for the Raptors. Some important housekeeping stuff first, though. The Raptors are kind of right at the tax apron right now, which basically just means they're not going to want to take on any extra money in any deals that they would do. They own all of their future first round picks, basically, from 2022 to 2028 and five of their next seven second round picks. So, Krina, are there any targets that you had in mind that we could start off with?
Yeah, so I've been kind of struggling with what the Raptors need to do. I've been kind of balancing the priorities of this team. And, you know, one side is to get a really good big, and the other side is to help the bench because we don't have good bench players right now, or at least Nick doesn't seem to think so because he's not playing them. And so I think right now I would probably lean towards the bench being a priority because although I understand why Nick is playing the starters really heavy minutes because that's how we're winning games, at one point does that not become sustainable because you're just going to kind of run them into the ground? So I'm looking at this trade article that Blake Murphy wrote for Sportsnet a couple of days ago because he kind of gathered from a lot of different people, different trades, and kind of gave his thoughts on them. And I'll tell you some of my favorite ones because there are some bad ones in there and I don't want to slander them too much. But this one trade from William Blue is Dragic to Atlanta for Bogdan Bogdanovic and two future second round picks. This is a pick that I really like just because, and I know like I would like to involve Dragic in a lot of these because we're just not using him right now. So I'd rather just swap his salary for somebody else that we can actually use during this time. And I like this trade. I don't think Atlanta would do it.
I would have to agree.
But it's nice to dream. I mean, who knows? Like with the Clippers trade that happened yesterday with Portland, I mean, it seems like some teams might just make a mistake every now and then. So
yeah, I was trying to look at just find any silver lining in that trade. And it was, I guess, financially, I guess the Clippers got under the luxury tax. So ownership doesn't owe any additional money. But I'm like, good God, like Powell and Covington. I'm like, those guys have value. Like they're good players. Like,
Trailblazers essentially traded Gary Trent Jr. for Eric Bledsoe.
Oof. That gets you fired, I think, right? Like, surely that gets you fired if you're... I don't know who's making the decisions right now in Portland, but... Did you say with the Bogdanovic trade there, was that them giving us a second-round pick, too?
Yeah, in terms of salary matching and things like that, too. But, yeah, I really don't see that happening.
Yeah, salary matching, it works. But I mean, they've already got DeLon Wright and Lou Williams as kind of pseudo backup point guard. So I don't think Dragic gives them what they need.
Yeah, another one that I was kind of looking at is Dragic, Precious Achiuwa, a top 10 protected 2022 first round pick and a 2023 second round pick to New Orleans for Jonas Valanciunas and Nickeil Alexander-Walker. I think this would also be a good trade. I know a lot of people are high on Precious, and Precious being involved in some of these trade talks is a little bit controversial, I would say.
I was going to say, do you know Precious Achiuwa on non-dunk attempts at the rim, he's shooting like 30% this year.
Oh, my God.
It's not quite that low. It was in the mid-30s last I checked, which was about last week. So, yeah, when he's not dunking the ball, it's kind of a nightmare at the rim.
Well, I mean, he started to take some corner threes, which I've been, you know, kind of pushing for him to do. but, yeah, no, he's an interesting guy. That's all really much I could say about that. But, yeah, I mean, I think it would be nice to get a big like Jonas Valanciunas back, or even Jakob Poeltl is a good target as well.
Yeah. I would love Poeltl. The thing is, the Spurs just never make trades ever. Like that trade they made to send Bryn Forbes out for Juancho Hernan Gomez in the last couple weeks there, that was their first in-season trade in 7 years, right? Like that Spurs front office, they just never make in-season trades. So I feel like just for that reason alone, Poeltl is unlikely.
Yeah, and I think even with Poeltl's contract, I think we would only be able to sign him to a 1 year or something like that. So in terms of long term, it would probably be a little bit difficult. But I think even with the Raptors front office, Masai is either gonna go all in or he's gonna do nothing.
That's what I mean. It's like he's not really like these on the fringes move. Like I've seen people talk about like Montrezl Harrell, like Rashawn Holmes. I'm like, it feels like we're either gonna do a big swing here or just nothing at all, because that's typically how it goes. Mm-hmm. I think we can probably see Dragic just get moved for basically nothing. Like I know Dallas is super interested, but at the same time they're probably like, oh well, I mean, whoever gets him is just probably gonna buy him out and then we'll scoop him up, because him and Luka have basically been talking all year.
What is your opinion on trading Chris Boucher? Because I know that's also been a controversial topic.
If it gets us a starting center, I think you'd absolutely do that. Because he's expiring, right? So I would say he's probably going to look for a raise. He's been at $7 million the last couple of years, and he would probably look to get like close to $10 million. So if you can trade him for just a real starting center, I think you probably have to do that.
Yeah, and I don't think I would do anything less than that, because even though he had kind of a tough like start to the season, but he's been playing a lot better recently and he does a lot of good things for the Raptors that I think that they need. Oh, yeah. So I think you're right in terms of like kind of holding him to a higher standard and what you get back.
I feel like in that framework for Valanciunas and Nickeil Alexander-Walker, I almost feel like it would have to be with three teams for them to be getting back like another center, right? Because that Pelicans team does not want to just be left with Jackson Hayes as their starting center. Like that'd be pretty rough for them, especially if Zion's Who the hell knows if Zion's coming back this year? But I would just say probably not at this point. That's another one I feel like it'd almost be tough for New Orleans to do, unless they have another deal lined up where they're bringing in another center.
It's tough. Like, it's really tough to predict this kind of thing.
I did a whole, like, hour and a half mock trade deadline, and I was looking at the Pelicans and all the different deals they could do for, like, Powell and McCollum and Covington and Nurkic, and then to see that's what they did. Surely there were better offers on the table. Like I can't possibly believe that Covington and Powell could get you Eric Bledsoe and Keon Johnson. That's wild.
I really saw that. I was like, wow, the LA Clippers are just trying to be the 2019 Raptors at this point. I literally laughed out loud when I saw that trade. I thought it was so funny.
Well, yeah, I was recording with another group for a different assignment there. And yeah, I looked down at the Bleacher Report notification. I'm like, what the hell? I'm like, surely that's a typo. Surely they missed something there. Surely that's a first round pick coming back and not a second round. Nope, it was.
I mean, hey, speaking of Portland, there's another trade here from William Liu. Dragic and the lottery protected 2022 first round pick to Portland for Yusuf Nurkic. So if Portland is, I don't know their direction, but
if they couldn't get a first for Powell and Covington, why the hell should we give them a first for Nurkic, right?
That's true. You're right.
But no, see, I would consider that. How old is Nurkic?
He's only 27, I think. 26, 27. Yeah, like,
so if you can get a commitment from like his agent saying like, yeah, he would re-sign for X amount of dollars this summer, then I think that's probably reasonable. I probably wouldn't give up a first there. That seems like too much to not have a commitment moving forward.
Yeah, and I think that's what it's all about, because the Raptors, they're starting to kind of piece it together. It's just a matter of what are you going to do now for the long term? Who's going to be, who are you building around your core? That's really the ultimate question. I saw there's another one, straight up Dragic to Washington for Spencer Dinwiddie.
Yeah, that would be pretty risky for Washington. I'd do that as Toronto pretty quickly, but
yeah, a lot of these is like, I don't know if the other team would actually do this. It feels like we're stretching it here. There was also a ridiculous one for Bradley Beal.
Oh, yeah, let's hear it.
And it was Dragic, OG, Trent Jr., and a lottery-protected 2022 first-round pick for Bradley Beal and Davis Bertans. Like, in what world are we doing that? And why?
I don't know. If it's like just Gary Trent and like maybe some like a lottery protected first over a couple seasons, I think then you can consider it. But yeah, once I heard Gary Trent and OG, I'm like, no, that's
Yeah, my issue is, like, these are two really young guys who are essentially part of the Raptors core right now, and you're giving them up for a 30-year-old Bradley Beal. I don't know.
Yeah, like Trent's 23. he's super young.
Yeah, he's 23 years old.
I know Dallas is obviously the other suitor. If you go Dwight Powell and Marjanovic, I think that matches salary. But the thing is, like, Powell's actually useful to them. He's like their kind of semi-starting center with Luka, like just the pick and roll center there. So I don't really know if they'd want to give up Powell there when they feel like they could just get him on the buyout market. So I think Nurkic is probably, out of everything we went through, I think Nurkic is probably the most realistic option there.
Yeah, I think I wouldn't mind that at all.
Would it just be Boucher there for Nurkic? No, it would have to be Boucher and Achiuwa or Flynn. I'd probably do Flynn. I feel like Achiuwa has a greater chance of being better, though I don't particularly like him right now. He's really struggled.
It's been tough with Flynn. I feel like he hasn't gotten enough of a chance or enough time to kind of get those reps and kind of show what he can do. It's tough because the Raptors have a lot of similar players. Like, they have a lot of, you know, they have a lot of similar guards. They have a lot of similar, you know, like forwards, things like that. So it's tough with minutes.
The great part about Van Vliet, though, like, if Flynn was kind of able to, like, develop at the offensive end sort of thing, like, you can play Flynn and Van Vliet together because he can guard the one and the two. Like, you can run 2 point guard lineups with him out there because he can guard at least smaller twos. Like, if you got like Klay Thompson running around there at 6'7" at the two, maybe that's not ideal, but the average two, Fred's like,
hey, Freddy's a nightmare for anybody. Okay, he's like, he's ripped the ball out of Giannis's hands how many times now?
He's got the whole under 6 foot advantage that he's just allowed to foul every possession. It never gets called.
It's the ball at eye level, that's why.
It's true, like with those guys that are 6 foot and smaller than 6 foot, it's like on those reach-ins and rip-throughs, they're just not getting called because they're just so small. They're just I don't know if the refs can't see it, but
yeah. And then there's just the big guys who just get called on everything just for being big.
For everything, like Toronto. I think last I checked, this has been the case for like 3 years now. We're like bottom of the league in fouls. Like, we foul so much. I think we've been bottom five the last couple of years, I think. So
don't you just love that stat?
Yeah, that's that's the product of not having a center, right? Because we don't really have that guy to kind of stand in the paint and actually protect the rim. We just have a bunch of 6'8" guys that want to switch everything. I would go Chris Boucher, Malachi Flynn, and first for Nurkic if we had a commitment that, hey, he would re-sign basically what he's on right now, like $12 million a year over the next, whatever, 3-4 years.
Even Dragic and a lottery-protected pick would work for Nurkic, too.
Yeah, that would do it, too. So it would have to be Dragic for Nurkic and Justice Winslow. So they'd be rerouting Winslow to us, too, to make that work, which is, hey, it's another 6'7" wing that can't shoot. He'll fit right in.
Well, he's not 6'9", so maybe not.
He's not 6'9". Yeah, that's just a no-go for Nick Nurse. He's out. Yeah. That's pretty much all the kind of trade stuff I got for Toronto, honestly. I don't think it's going to be that big of a splash. I'd be shocked if Van Vliet, that'd be a crime if he got moved. I'd be shocked if Dragic didn't get moved. I think he's the only one that's likely to get traded, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Well, thank you very much for joining me. I know we went 20 minutes instead of 10. I didn't realize that. I apologize.
It's okay. There's always, Raptors have a lot of questions surrounding
them, so. Always. Yeah, it can never just be straightforward. But thank you again, Karina. I appreciate it.
Of course. Of course. Thanks for having me on.
All right. The time skip is complete. We've got about a couple weeks left here in the season, so let's take a look back at the Toronto Raptors 21-22 campaign with a little bit of 2020 hindsight. Starting with the trade deadline here, the Raptors only made one move, and that was the obvious Goran Dragic trade. They essentially traded Goran Dragic to the San Antonio Spurs and moved down 15 spots in the upcoming draft for Thaddeus Young. This trade keeps Toronto out of the luxury tax this summer, which will allow them to spend an extra $5 million with their mid-level exception in free agency if they so choose. Thaddeus Young has been an awesome sort of pseudo-center on defense for us so far. He fits right in with that basically anti everything except long athletic wings thing we've got going on with Nick Nurse this season. And in all seriousness, though, he's really embraced these younger Raptors, Scotty Barnes in particular. I read an interview of Thad talking about Barnes recently. I believe that was with Sportsnet's William Liu. Anyway, Thad was more or less talking about how Scotty Barnes is going to be a star, you know, future star in the league, but then proceeded to bash him for the remainder of the interview for for picking up fouls that older guys like him should be responsible for. In contrast to Goran Dragic, who basically wanted out the moment he arrived at Toronto, having a playable vet like Thad who's happy to be in Toronto is a real breath of fresh air for the team. Back to Scotty Barnes here. I think there's going to be a mini uprising in Toronto if he doesn't win Rookie of the Year, because he's been fantastic from start to finish. He's up to over 18 points, 8 rebounds, 2 steals, over 50% shooting since the All-Star break. He's got a really unorthodox scoring style on offense. At 6'8 with that plus 6 wingspan at 7'2, Barnes likes to probe his way into the paint and get up these spinning hooks and floaters and close jumpers that often just look out of control. Even this late in the season, he still catches defenders off guard, because you just don't typically see players barreling down the lane bully ball style in search for these hooks and push shots. Another great aspect of Scotty's game on offense is his court vision, particularly in transition. He'll happily glide to the rim for easy dunks, but loves to look off defenders before lobbing it up to guys like Siakam, Boucher, Achiuwa, or whichever one of our 6'8 wings happens to be darting down the other side of the floor. He also throws some real baseball pitcher fastball styles with one hand, resulting in a lot of open corner threes. He really puts some heat on those cross-court passes when he gets them off. And obviously, he likes to navigate the high post as well, which allows him to get some quick bounce passes off into the baseline for some easy layups that way, too. I think Scotty Barnes is developing into a real offensive weapon under Nick Nurse right now. Also, if you haven't had your eyes glued to the standings, Toronto is currently tied for the 6th or 7th seed, depending on how you look at it, with the Cleveland Cavaliers. Both teams are pretty desperate to stay above that 7 seed as to avoid the play-in tournament before the playoffs. The Raptors recently lost 3 really bad games to the Orlando Magic, Detroit Pistons, and Los Angeles Lakers. Orlando and Detroit, obviously the 2 worst teams in the East, and the Raptors were up 5 in the final minute of play versus LA. Oh man, you ever just watch a game and know something bad is about to happen before it does? That was basically that Lakers game. Up 3 with 10 seconds left, Scotty Barnes inbounds to Precious Achiuwa. Westbrook rips it loose, gets the steal, marches it down to our 3-point line, and just buries the 3 in Scotty's face. I basically haven't seen him do that all season to any team. And the Lakers stole that one in overtime, as we know. If you could just have even 2 of those 3 real stingers back, Toronto would be looking at a 43-30 record approximately, which comfortably puts them in the 5 seed at that point. Instead, they're tied between the 6th and 7th seed, fighting for their playoff lives with about 8-9 games remaining. This leads me to my next point on what exactly do the Raptors look like in a playoff series? What do they hang their hats on? Obviously, it's going to have to start with their defense, specifically their ability to force turnovers. Nick Nurse has fully committed to essentially playing an all-athletic wing rotation when the games matter most. Minus Fred VanVleet, everyone out there, OG Anunoby, Pascal Siakam, Chris Boucher, Precious Achiuwa, Scotty Barnes, Thaddeus Young, are all basically 6'8 plus with those plus 6 wingspans. They hedge, they trap, they feint the doubles, they collapse the post, run you off the 3-point line. They speed teams up, force them into quick shots, bad passes, and then it's just a track race from there. Toronto is number 1 in turnovers forced and number 2 in fast break frequency, still top 5 in fast break efficiency as well. Well then, what happens when they play a more disciplined team that doesn't give the ball away, as you would presume of another playoff matchup? Well, Toronto is still number 1 by a country mile in fast break frequency off of live defensive rebounds, so that's not off of turnovers or anything like that. Almost 40% of opponent misses result in a Toronto fast break this season, which is completely insane. No one's even close to that this year. So the Raptors are probably going to live and die with these scrappy defenders. They're going to get out and run,
Van Vliet and Gary Trent are going to bomb from three. Pascal, OG, Achiuwa are going to rim run every chance they get. And that's just how Toronto's going to put pressure on these higher seeds and win playoff games. I think Philadelphia and Miami specifically could have a tough time in a potential first round matchup against Toronto this year. How crazy would that be with Miami, by the way? Kyle Lowry facing off against his former teammates in the first round. Anyway, Miami has really struggled to score in the half court this season, and guess who allows the lowest fast break frequency of any defense this year? Yep, it's Toronto. They're essentially one of the two best fast breaking teams in the league, so they sure as hell know how to stop it on the other end. When you look at the 76ers, Nick Nurse has put two on Joel Embiid all season, forcing him to make the correct read out of the post, which he doesn't actually do all the time. And when he does, his supporting cast of shooters are basically average at best between Tyrese Maxey, Tobias Harris, and Matisse Thybulle especially. More on the Sixers here, Embiid and Harden are basically the two worst transition defenders in the entire NBA. They do not hustle back, they're slow, they complain about foul calls, so there's a real avenue for some fast break punishment there for Toronto. I obviously wouldn't favor the Raptors in either of these potential matchups, even though it sounds like I might right now, but I'm just showing there's a clear path to how an upset could potentially happen. Believe me, I'm all for pushing some outrageous Toronto Raptors propaganda, but it's also worth noting some of the team's serious weaknesses that make them obvious underdogs in basically any first round matchup right now. And their biggest weakness, of course, we've got to start in the half court here. They rank 27th in the league this year in half court offense. Yikes. I believe it was the Chicago Bulls broadcast last week that said it's just tall dudes passing to other tall dudes in regards to Toronto's offense, which pretty much sums up how it's been all season. The only reason Toronto isn't dead last in half-court offense is their incredible offensive rebounding. As a team, they're second in their offensive rebound rate and second in converting off of those misses. But as we know, one of the first major adjustments in playoff basketball is to slow the game down and eliminate all easy buckets. Everyone plays harder, more physical basketball. Guys generally get back on defense and take away those easy transition opportunities. Simple things like boxing out, for example, become key points of emphasis as well. These adjustments have basically been the bane of the Raptors' playoff existence, even dating back to the early 2010s with Kyle Lowry and DeMar DeRozan. This year, that's going to put a ton of strain on Fred VanVleet and Pascal Siakam to basically play perfect basketball as essentially Toronto's only half-decent creators. They don't even have anyone else who can run pick and roll in the half court, I don't think, looking at the roster. I can still remember Fred VanVleet playing 42 minutes a night before Pascal Siakam came back from that shoulder surgery in late November. Oh, and even if VanVleet and Siakam create at a higher level than expected on ball, the Raps still got to knock down their open threes, and there hasn't really been much consistency there this season for the Raptors. Overall, they're shooting 35% from beyond the arc as a team, which is in the bottom half of the league. At this point in the season, Toronto can very realistically finish anywhere between 5th and 7th in the Eastern Conference. 7th becomes disastrous because then you have to face off against Kevin Durant in the play-in. You don't want that. The Raptors do not want to see Kevin Durant in a one-off play-in game, so they're definitely going to be gunning for that 5th or 6th seed. From there, it's basically a two-game difference between the 1st and 4th seeds in the Eastern Conference, so Toronto could match up with any of Miami, Milwaukee, Philadelphia, or Boston right now. We just talked about some potential upset possibilities versus Miami and Philadelphia, but man, as a Raptors fan, I do not want to see Milwaukee or Boston round one. Those matchups are looking really grim right now. Giannis and the Bucks in Milwaukee have been sleeping giants all season. Middleton and Holiday both missed significant time together in the first 4 to 5 weeks of the season. Brooke Lopez essentially missed the entire season up to about a week ago. So Giannis was just coasting early on in the season as Milwaukee was basically treading water for the first 6 weeks, 2 months of the season. Several months later though, and Giannis is totally back in full-blown MVP mode. Chris Middleton, Drew Holiday, Brooke Lopez are back. The Bucks have won 10 of their last 12, I believe. Could be 11 of their 13 tonight. So if you're Toronto, this isn't 2019 anymore. Giannis is a battle-hardened killer, and he's got all kinds of shooting around him now too. Nick Nurse isn't going to be able to deploy the wall on Giannis, and he doesn't have a Marc Gasol type to body him up one-on-one. While the Bucks do give up a lot of threes on defense, they don't foul, they don't bail you out, they get back in transition, and they have a ton of size inside. Dominating in transition and on the offensive glass is not going to be a reliable option against the defending champions. This basically means that, again, like 2019, Toronto is going to have to go full-blown scorched earth from three in that series. I'm not saying it's impossible, but I just want no part of Giannis Antetokounmpo and the Milwaukee Bucks in round one. The other team I really don't want to see right now is the Boston Celtics. Jason Tatum and the Celtics are almost unrecognizable since the calendar flipped to 2022. Their three-point shooting slump is a thing of the past. Robert Williams and Al Horford are healthy. Derek White has been a massive upgrade on the perimeter over Dennis Schroeder. Peyton Pritchard is on fire coming off the bench in that Patty Mills three-point bomber role. Boston has won 9 of their last 12 regular season games versus Toronto. They knocked us out of the bubble playoffs in round two. Oh yeah, they're also 29-9 with the best net rating and best defense in the NBA in 2022. Boston has allowed just 105 points per 100 possessions in 2022. The second-ranked defense has allowed 109. The gap between Boston and the number 2 defense is the same gap between the number 2 and the number 12 defense. So that's how just completely dominant their defense has been. You know, now that I've kind of laid that all out there, said it out loud, really absorbed it, maybe I would rather have Milwaukee round 1 than Boston. On top of having our number, basically since drafting Jason Tatum, Boston has just been the best team in the East for going on 3 months now, basically. I'd say give me Kyle Lowry, Jimmy Butler, and Bam Adebayo in Miami. Give me Joel Embiid and James Harden in Philly. I think Nick Nurse has the tools to make those series interesting at the very least, but it just feels like Milwaukee and Boston are really bad matchups for our guys right now. At the time of recording this, Toronto has about 8 games to go in the regular season, so we'll see what happens. We'll see how this plays out. Thank you, everybody, so much for tuning in to the Toronto Raptors In Depth, and I'll talk to y'all soon. Until then.